under the green cloud. That's a broken sun. Oh yes, oh yes, I've been living a long time to be back to your home, home. So I gave you my land, won't be you. So where you got to me? Bitter blue, no, no, my bitter blue.
The pop star Cat Stevens became a Muslim 3 years ago, married his fiancée in the London mosque, and is now known as Yusuf Islam. Age 32, born in London of a Greek Cypriot father and Swedish mother, he turned his back on his musical career, surrendered fame and money, and at present works, in his own words, only for Allah. Now that film excerpt, by courtesy of the BBC, we've just been looking at, that was Cat Stevens. We're now looking at Yusuf Islam. Is there a difference, Yusuf?
Well, the difference, I would say, is gigantic. The transformation that Islam makes to a person.
You feel this internally?
I feel it absolutely, internally and externally also. But it's really, I could make an analogy for you if you like.
Please.
It's as if I was dead and I'm now alive. And it's that big a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another way you could say was as if I was the same person, but the room was in darkness. And when God decided, he switched on the light, and I could see the universe around me with a real eye, instead of just being in darkness, as you say.
I suppose having a Greek Cypriot father and a Swedish mother, kind of a Greek Orthodox background, and perhaps Protestant from your mother, you would be born in London, you'd be brought up as a Christian to start with. The culture, the background would be Christian.
The family was really, it was a strong family. There was lots of love in the family,
yeah.
And I think that helps also.
Mm. Any religious background, would it have been Christian?
They sent me to the nearest school, which was in Dewey Lane, which was a Roman Catholic school, and they were run by nuns, and that was really where I learned, I suppose, about God, heaven and hell, the angels, Jesus, who's beyond him.
Could you enlighten me and a few others, of course, about the basic principles of Islam?
Islam, the basic principle, is to believe in no God except God. That, in itself, is, it sweeps the board. It purifies you of any superstitions or attachments to this world. It puts you in line with the reality, which is that there is only one God, and he is the creator of all the universe, all the planets, the stars, the suns, the moons, the heaven and the earth, and every form of life, and that he cannot be divided. This is the ultimate truth. La ilaha illallah, meaning there is no God but God, and this is all his kingdom. So this is about Islam. It purifies the thoughts of man. It takes him away from duality, multiplicity, problems, and it puts him into line with the true reality, which is that everything belongs to God and everything is returned into him.
But Christianity is monotheistic too, isn't it? And what in particular way is Islam? How do you demonstrate in your daily life the religion of Islam?
You demonstrate it in your attitude within and without. What you see outside is a Muslim perhaps praying five times a day. This immediate
demonstration.
This is a very strong demonstration. Mm-hmm. It's not left up to one day a week. You think that you need nourishment for your body. You have to eat several times a day in order to sustain your body. Well, And your soul also. Isn't your soul more important than your body? Your soul needs nourishment. So five times a day, a Muslim prays and detaches himself from the world, turns his back on the world and faces God.
Are there set prayers or individual prayers that you can spontaneously make up?
You can pray anywhere, but the form is set in a way. There are certain movements, but the whole thing takes place really in your intention. Your intention begins the prayer, and then your prayer is also linked with a physical motion as well. Because the world is not just, the man is not just spirit, he's spirit and body. So you have to combine all things, like I was saying. Islam mm-hmm. combines everything.
Are you happier now than you were?
Happier, ecstatically, really. But you can't say that I'm happy about the same things. I'm happy about the fact that God has led me to understanding so many things. For instance, what has Islam got over Christianity? I think you sort of mentioned something like that.
I asked you that.
Well, Islam, of course, is the final religion. It is, in fact, the religion of all the prophets. It means surrender. Every prophet that was ever sent was a Muslim, or one who submitted to God. So you must understand first what Muslim means. Also, the Quran teaches you really the character of Jesus in a better way, much better than I've ever understood him before.
Yes,
and this is to say that Jesus was made without father. In other words, mother was pure. But God can do anything. God can just say be, and it is. This is the point where we totally believe that in Mary and her, we honor her. But when it comes down to saying that Jesus is a God, or God, then we absolutely refute it, because he himself was only telling the Jews and the children of Israel to worship, to come back to the true religion, and the religion, in fact, of Abraham, which is a Muslim.
Well, that's semantics, I think, because I mean, Abraham was 4,800 BC, the Judaism pioneer. But why do you say it's the final religion? You have Abraham, you have the other Jewish prophets, you have Jesus, you have Muhammad, over a time scale of 2,000 years. Why should that be the final revelation? Why shouldn't there be more?
Why shouldn't there be more? Why does man keep on having to learn the lesson?
Well, he does, unfortunately.
Until you come to Islam. And when you come to Islam, you learn that the message has been completed.
But then everybody has to learn that, Yusuf.
This is true.
Yeah. Islam a proselytizing religion then?
Islam is the belief in God. It's the fundamental belief that man was made to be his deputy on earth and to bring about his laws and commands on earth. Man is the dividing between the physical world and the spiritual world, if you like. He has foresight into the unseen. But we don't all have foresight. We have to follow the chosen ones whom God has chosen to lead us. Moses.
Certainly.
Was delivering a message from the unseen. He was bringing a brand of warmth for the people that they may follow. Jesus, again, peace be on him, was bringing a message to the people. Now, there's always people who will disbelieve. Every prophet has had a difficult time. There's never been an easy time for any prophet. And of course, with Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, peace be on him, he had one of the most difficult times, because if you think where he was brought up in Mecca, they were worshipping 360 idols in that place which Abraham had built.
Can I ask you, don't you miss any of the old life? I mean, the travel, the excitement, the money?
Not really. It was very sort of unfulfilling, you know. Even though there was attractions to it, they were all very shallow.
That's the interesting thing, Yusuf, because many people are, you know, watching us now, will feel that they themselves are dissatisfied, and they have lots of problems. That if we could win the pools, then most of those problems would be solved. But you, with your royalties, you were very rich. You won the pools, didn't you, in a sense? And you still have problems.
This is it. There's no relief in this world. If you're searching for relief in this world, then most definitely you'll get none. Finally, the cure for this life is death. Everything has a cure. Everything has a cure. Really, God has created diseases and their cures. But the cure for life, this world, is death. You have to pass through death. Now, what you do while you're here, this is the test. Because you're given a body. Everybody is given a body and a soul. Now, people spend too much time on the body and not enough time on the soul. Because the soul will go on forever, whereas the body only has so long. It's a matter of commerce, if you really think about it. You're a fool if you don't analyze the situation and look up to the truth and say, yes, I am but a human being, but I've been given something which I can work with, and that is the soul.
When your body had this very serious illness happen to it, I think it was 1968, was this the time when you started to think?
Actually, I just had a dose of success, if you like, with a thing called Matthew and Son,
yes.
And a few songs became quite famous very quickly.
Mm.
And immediately I was worked into the ground. This was the system, the mechanicism, you know, of the star machine. You start doing tours, and I used to drink at that time, I was about 19, I used to drink a bottle of brandy a night to go on stage, to find enough courage to go on stage. And this is how I worked myself into the ground, and finally my body gave up, and I got TB, and I had to go to hospital for 3 months and convalesce for a whole year.
And you covered the hospital mirrors with paper, I've read somewhere. Why was that?
Well, this was the time when I'd been given the opportunity to stop this activity, this senseless activity, you know, which kept on going. I put a stop to it and started to think about my existence.
You hated yourself? Were you cutting out the outside world?
I never really hated myself, but I was trying to find out who I was.
Mm.
I was not just that. I was coming through a dark period, and I was being led. And in fact, I had a book with me then called The Secret Path. And it was the first time I had read anything which dealt with death face on. And I was so happy because I'd always been frightened of death and not wondering what, we're not being able to see through it.
On any of the other occasions, have you been in danger of death? You recovered from the hospital.
Well, at that time it was very serious to me. I thought everybody was having me on and said, actually I was dying, but they were telling me, oh, you're going to be all right. And this is the kind of thing your mind plays with. But there was a time when I came close to death. I remember I was swimming in Los Angeles. There was a friend's house on the beach, a very rich people, you know, and I thought it looks good. So I went for a little dip. And as I got out there, it was quite cold. I thought, oh, this is enough for me. I'll start coming back. So then I found myself in this terrible current. There was no way I could ever get back there.
Mm.
And I was becoming very, very tired. So I was now faced with this question, death.
Mm.
This might be my time.
Mm.
So I prayed to God. I said, God, if you save me from this, I'll give myself to you. And at that precise moment, a wave from somewhere came and lifted me up and pushed me, and I started swimming.
Extraordinary.
This is, you know, it's a simple story, but...
Did you keep your bargain with God?
Now, this is it. We forget our bargains. When we're in trouble, we turn to God. When we're in fine health, We don't. We forget.
It's a good thing to be conquered earlier.
But God doesn't forget. And he showed me the way to fulfill my day. Mm-hmm. And Islam is the way.
There are discrepancies, aren't there, between what is in the Quran and what subsequent Ottoman Empire decree has made. Like the veil, I understand, is not in the Quran. The need to wear the veil.
Actually, no. The Quran, you know, again, some people have not read the Quran properly, but the Quran does say, it tells, first of all, the men, and this is the first thing, to lower their gaze. Now, the eyelid is, in fact, a veil for the man. He is not to look with desire at a lady or a woman. In fact, Jesus himself said, if you look with desire at a lady...
Yeah, but what about the veil? Where does that come into
play? The veil then follows. It says, and to the women to be modest and to cover their adornment. Because God has made women more beautiful, obviously. This is a fact of nature. This is the way he's created us. He's made women beautiful, and he's given one of the most beautiful things to women is the hair, and it says in the Quran, cover your adornment except that which is necessary. And in fact, a woman has reminded me that in order to be a person in Islam, you're not made, if you're a woman, you're put up like a doll, you know, given ears and a little bunny tail, or to, used for men to just gaze and gawk at. No. A woman is accepted for being a person. You're looking at her as a face, as a person, and her deeds. You're not necessarily looking at her as an object of desire. So it brings women right up to the proper level, which is as a human being and responsible for their deeds.
But there's an anomaly in the wearing of the veil, isn't there? I mean, the Syrian middle-aged women have got rid of the veil, and their daughters are taking it up again.
Alhamdulillah, meaning, praise be to God, he is showing the people the right way.
I was wondering what the effect on your father was, who, after all, as a Greek Cypriot, his mortal enemy would be the Turk, the Ottoman Empire, the Muslim Empire. What did he think about you becoming a Muslim?
Well, this is really a fantasy, a fiction, something which is made up, I must say, by the powers, the bigger powers trying to divide the smaller people. Because my father came from an island, Cyprus, where the Turks and the Greeks actually, although they had different backgrounds, were brothers. And of course the influence on each other was gigantic. And of course Cyprus is very close to Palestine, Turkey and Egypt. And in fact my father grew up in Egypt. So Islam was nothing new to him. In fact I used to remember him saying sometimes, Assalamu alaikum, which is the greetings of the Muslim, which is peace be with you. I didn't exactly know what he was saying, and so he believed in God.
But he was Greek Orthodox?
Greek Orthodox. Mm-hmm. Yeah, born into the religion of...
So there was no shock to him that you were a Muslim?
That I became a Muslim? Mm. No. In fact, maybe a little bit of a shock in the beginning, but it was so natural. He knew that it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
And
I have an example of that, because he died in 1978. And on his deathbed was the time when he first called me Yusuf. Now you can imagine, he was an old man, 78. He was in fact 78. But this was all his life. He'd called me something else. All my life he called me something else. At this point, he was in the real state, because he knew, obviously, that the time was coming. He called me Yusuf. And when my mother said, when he asked, where is Yusuf? And she said, he's at the mosque. He was happy. He gave my mother a smile. And this is something which is a guidance for me, because I was accepted by my father. He accepted me as Yusuf.
They're very important to you, I think. There are many sacrifices or hardships that you have to undergo as a Muslim, the month of Ramadan. Now, what is the particular hardship in that for you?
For Muslims, in general, they have to do without food and partaking of anything. If they smoke, and they're not really supposed to smoke, but if they smoke, they give up smoking as well. And
Of course, they don't drink alcohol, do they? At any time.
No, Muslim shouldn't drink alcohol. So we give up all for eating, and we maintain this fast from the morning to the sunset, from dawn to sunset. Mm. The hardship is really in being able to remember why you're doing it. Because you can do it, and do it very simply. It's not difficult, because I'm sure you know, as a busy man, sometimes you're so busy, you forget to eat. And it's no hardship. But when you do it on purpose, you have to now keep on checking your intention. You are doing it. Why? Because you know that God sees you. If you go around the corner and have a sandwich by yourself, nobody knows. Of course, God knows. This is a way of developing the consciousness to God, the seeing, the one who sees. So it's a matter of being aware.
You speak with such certainty, Yusuf. Don't you ever have doubts?
No, from the moment I started reading the Quran, the doubts were washed away. All the questions that you could ever ask are there. It's the book which is until the end of time for man's guidance. Science has never contradicted what the Quran has said. And in reality, when you come through all the other channels, you'll find the Word of God perfected and preserved in the Quran.
What for you is the greatest sin?
The greatest sin, as all Muslims know, is to worship anything other than God. To associate, in other words, any partner with Him. That is to fear. That is to fear that there might be some other power. All right, but say you have, for instance, I had in the beginning a few superstitions. Let me see if I can remember them.
A ladder,
black cat, 13, traveling on 13. All these kind of things. You must realize that there is no power to do you harm. Any power. Unless God has written it for you.
So you have no fear then of anything?
Only unless I'm undutiful to God, in which case I have fear that He might punish me for forgetting His might, His power, mm-hmm. His affection, His reality. If you forget, you are the one who loses.
You have a great musical talent, which is not being used now. Don't you miss, or do you feel that you'll never come back to music again?
I'm not missing anything really, because the Quran is in one way also like the most masterful musical piece. Everything is timed, and its measure is complete. It has meaning. It has meaning, eternal meaning, truth. Everything combined, I could never. You see, when I wrote songs, I used to write because I felt people weren't saying these things. I had to come and talk about this because people weren't saying that. I had to talk about children, remind them about this and that. But finally, when I read the Quran, I realized it had already been written.
Can we actually have one of your songs, one of your own compositions, on the road to find out? Is this number particularly relevant to you?
I think it is, it's relevant to the seeker, because we all have the seeker in us.
Mm.
And I wrote that song knowing in my heart that there is something above, constantly above, which I'm searching for, but I didn't know what. And you'll find many verses in there talking about leaving home and going out on the search and listening to some and not listening to others, but finally believing in the direction, on the road to find out. And the last verse is the most important, significant, because in fact it was like a miniature prophecy where I said, pick up a good book. And I made sure I said a good book and not the good book, in case some people thought it might be the Bible. At that time even I was prepared, and I knew that the book is the thing which raises man, the Word. And the Word is with God. That the Word is in the Quran complete.
have had their lives altered in some profound way by their particular revelation. But for none of them has the change been quite so dramatic as it has been for our guest tonight. As a pop superstar on both sides of the Atlantic, Cat Stevens enjoyed a lifestyle envied by millions. He first made it in 1966 when his song I Love My Dog went into the charts. But the success of that and his next even bigger hit, Matthew and Son, was cut short when in 1968 he was struck down by tuberculosis. After a year's convalescence, he came back with a string of new and very different hit songs.
Is better known to millions as Cat Stevens.
On the series so far have had their lives altered in some profound way by their particular revelation. But for none of them has the change been quite so dramatic as it has been for our guest tonight. As a pop superstar on both sides of the Atlantic, Cat Stevens enjoyed a lifestyle envied by millions. He first made it in 1966 when his song I Love My Dog went into the charts. But the success of that and his next even bigger hit, Matthew and Son, was cut short when in 1968 he was struck down by tuberculosis. After a year's convalescence, he came back with a string of new and very different hit songs.
Has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the last bird. Praise for the singing, pray for the morning, pray for the screaming.
Well, that song and the number of others that followed signaled to those who were interested that Cat Stevens was a man in search of something spiritual. By the mid-70s, having flirted with astrology and Buddhism, he found it. He announced he was giving up his singing career to become a Muslim. To prove it, he changed his name to Yusuf Islam. Now, what to many pop stars would nearly be a flash in the pan, to Yusuf Islam has been an enduring truth. For the past 7 years, he's devoted much of his life to the study of the Quran and Islam, and he spends a lot of time working with a school and Islamic study centre in London. Yusuf Islam, it's become rather a cliche of the gossip columns that the glamour and the razzmatazz of the pop superstar's life is actually hell if you're living it. Is that the way you found it?
Well, music, the music business is, yes, it's connected quite a lot with hell, I should think, but I wouldn't say it's all like that, though. Of course, there is a good side to it, providing you can see it for what it is.
As a child, at least one member of your family was Greek Orthodox, were you drawn to any particular religion?
Of course, I received basic Christian upbringing, I didn't really question that because, of course, you take it for granted that your parents know better than you. But anyway, as I grew up in that atmosphere, there did seem to be a sort of a dichotomy or separation between what seemed to be the spiritual ideal, you know, and the actual material life going on around me. So I suppose because of the attraction of the life of the world, and because the religious life seemed kind of difficult and not quite for me, so I went naturally into the life of the world. I was brought up in the West End of London, so I think that had something to do with me going into show business.
But in those years, in the late 60s, it seemed that scarcely a week went by without some pop star or other heading for the hills in India or Nepal to sit at the feet of a guru. Were you ever tempted to take that path?
Yes, in fact, that was part of my journey, I would say, that, you know, during that time, I think I'd just had a sort of brief career in the beginning with my early songs and things. And then I'd contracted tuberculosis. That was around, let me see, 1969, something like that, 1968. That made me think more seriously about life. I started studying meditation. In a way, I'd lost my faith in Christianity, I suppose, because I felt that it was too linked with the system, you know, and we wanted to break away from the system. I believed in God, but not through any particular dogma or, you know, doctrine.
Could I just ask you before you go on, what do you mean linked with the system when you were talking about Christianity?
Well, it seemed to me that the Christian faith was, so there was a kind of a hierarchy, you know, built in with it. And I think I wanted something more natural. Perhaps more spiritual. I didn't find it in the church.
When you were struck down with TB, and it took you a year's convalescence to get over that, did you at any time feel that this was a sort of divine retribution for your evil life? I mean, the headlines about Cat Stevens up until then had been Cat Stevens, the man with the fast ladies and fast cars. Did you feel that God was somehow telling you something when you led you down with TB?
Not really. I think it was more of a natural consequence. I thought that it was nature working its way out. But of course, there was also the other thought that I have to actually somehow find out what this nature is and what it wants from me. And of course, as I said, I still believed deeply in God, but I didn't know exactly how to connect, or what exactly God wanted from me.
And during this time of spiritual quest, you tried a number of things, didn't you? You didn't immediately come to Islam. You tried a number of things on the way, as it were.
Yes, as I say, I tried meditation. I mean, I was a vegetarian. I believed, of course, along with many of my generation, in peace, love, but the practical way of achieving that, I had no idea. I'd also become interested in Zen, also in astrology. At one time I was, you know, also looking at the stars for guidance. You know, you go through all these phases. Ultimately, I wasn't sure. I didn't think there was any particular religion which seemed to have the universal answer. The meaning that would be for me and for everyone else at the same time. I didn't think there was such a faith. I thought perhaps I'd have to make up my own religion, if you like.
Well, can you tell us how your revelation, your conversion to Islam, the moment that we knew that Islam was the way forward for you, how did that happen?
Well, it was rather late. I was about 27 at that time. And I tried, as I said, all these other ways. I'd been searching, but without finding actually the peace that I was looking for. Then I was given a copy of the Quran. And that's really how I began to embrace Islam. It was, in fact, a gift from my elder brother, David. And when I started to read the Quran, it struck me that this was like no other book I'd ever come across. The words seemed to be so straightforward and speaking with such authority. It didn't seem as if any human being had written this book.
Was there one sentence in the Quran that unlocked the secret for you?
Well, I think if you take the Quran as a whole, it couldn't just have happened like that with one sentence, but it was a gradual awakening to the fact that there was nothing wrong with this book. I mean, the more I read it, the more I realized there was no contradiction, whereas all other books I knew had to have something wrong with them. They were written by a human being, and it had to. But there was something about this book that didn't show any signs of imperfection. And the most striking thing, I would say, the thing that grasped me the most,
was the testimony in the Quran, the constant testimony to the fact that there is only one God. And that, to me, gave me the message I was looking for, because up until that point, I thought that religion is a personal business, something which, well, you choose that way, I'll choose this way, I personally think I'm right. But in fact, this was something which I felt had to be accepted by everyone, because everyone by nature believes in some higher power, some controlling force. Many names are given, but essentially it comes down to this, that there has to be only one for all. And that naturally led to changing my whole view of life. For instance, it naturally brings you to understand that people are equal. Created by the same God. And that we're all servants of the same Lord. So that gives you a kind of a feeling that there is purpose, bond between human beings. And that's what I found was the most impressive aspect of the Quran.
When you began to read the Quran, did you find there were certain passages which you took to be signposts on this path you were following?
Yes, I think if I can read you a very small chapter first. This is in fact called the chapter of unity. And it's said to be equal to one third of the Quran, because again, the subject is unity. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم قل هو الله أحد الله الصمد لم يلد ولم يولد ولم يكن له كفوا أحد.
Translation of that. In the name of God,
the gracious, most merciful, say, He is Allah, the One. Allah, the sole Lord of all.
He neither bears children, nor was he ever born. And like him, there is no one. So I think this gives you the effect to understand
that oneness of God means oneness of purpose for us and for the universe.
So when you came into contact with this oneness of purpose, having read and accepted the Quran, did you feel that you just had to cut yourself off from the life you had led before? I mean, could you have carried on singing, for example, or did you have to put that behind you?
Well, you see, it wasn't necessary for me to cut myself off as such. And in fact, I didn't, because I kept on making music, I kept on singing, I was on the road, but yet I was still a Muslim. What happened was, I think, when I finally did embrace Islam, officially, if you like, unquote, then I had to begin to do certain things. One of them is, of course, most important, is the prayer, is that you pray five times a day. And this, in a way, had an incredible effect on my life, because your relationship with God, the closeness that you feel, has to begin with prayer. How else do we communicate with God? So that starts to develop your God consciousness. After that, you find that, of course, you can't do the same things you used to do, because you know that God has made it clear for you that this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do. So you start to make a way in your life, and you start to go away from those things which are dangerous. For instance, singing on stage. It's obvious that music isn't forbidden as such in Islam, but showing off is, because again it contradicts your belief that there is only one to be worshipped. So therefore, any idea that would lead to some kind of human worship or idolization is bad. Therefore, being on a stage, having spotlight, even this situation is slightly more innocent, but you've got to be very careful. So I withdrew from public performances, and I just continued to make records. But again, after a while, I lost my interest in music as well, to a large degree. So I was more interested in, studying Islam, and that's what I did.
It's a very formal code, isn't it? It's a very strict code in the Quran. Does it? Do you find it shackles you, in a way? It lays down so clearly how you must lead your life. It does seem to cut out a lot of human free will.
Well, actually, I would say it's the opposite, because what I would say is, people that go around, number one, saying that they're free, they've got free will. Well, yes, we do have free will, to a certain extent. And yes, they are free to go on making mistakes. But if you choose to follow God's way, this is your choice. Doesn't mean that you're giving up your free will. It means that you're submitting your will to God's will. And that really, I think, is something to do with controlling yourself as well. This helps you to know where you're going. Otherwise, you know that so many people are lost, because they're all completely free. They've got no rules. But another thing, I would say that it's not so much, let's say, it's a restricted way of life. Actually, the basic rule in Islam, which I don't think many people know, is that everything is allowed except
those things which are forbidden. And that's a completely different way of looking at it. And that is, in fact, the way it is in Islam. For instance, if you're talking about food,
all food is permitted.
Except for, we say, pork or dead meat, meat which has died by itself, naturally, and so on. So if you look at it, it's the other way around. We're free to do anything, so long as it doesn't go against some of the commandments that we know.
How did your colleagues, the people you were working with, people in the music business at the time, react when you embraced Islam as passionately as you have? I mean, did you find that they were sceptical, that they said, oh, here's another pop star, you know, who's found his instant karma?
I think a lot of my friends in the beginning, you see, as I was studying the Quran before my acceptance, I was withdrawing from the social circuit, if you like, because anyway, I didn't like the social circuit. I never liked parties, I never liked, you know, receptions, and I always had to be rather drunk to, you know, to go on with them. But yes, I was withdrawing, and my friends, I think a lot of them thought I was acting rather strange. You know, here was I carrying this book with me everywhere, and going into my room and reading. And but of course, you've got to also realize that a lot of my friends had been with me for a long time. They know also my lyrics, my character, and they knew I was searching. Perhaps they did think, oh, this is just a passing phase, you know, this is just something which is he's going through.
It is 1971, it must be Islam, yes.
Yeah, so, but that, of course, has been proved wrong, because no one really enters Islam to leave it. It's, there's no wish to go anywhere else.
How many of your friends from those days actually followed you into the world of Islam?
Yes, I mean, I still have very good relations with, you know, my friends from my previous career. And I still have business associates, for instance, accountants and such. But I wouldn't say that they've embraced Islam as I have. But they've come to understand the message of Islam, which I think is very important. I think the first stage, if you're not searching desperately for a way of life, you first of all must look at things in their perspective. And a lot of people, I think, have been misjudging Islam because of the way it's been presented, and usually by, of course, non-Muslims.
Perhaps not misjudging. I think a lot of people are perhaps frightened of the revelation of Islam, because they see in the revelation of Islam the Ayatollah. They see the face of the Ayatollah. Mm. And they're terrified of what he's doing, the Ayatollah and his holy war.
Mm. Well, as I often say, I mean, if you're going to take this aspect or this view of Islam, you've got to remember that this is one particular event which is happening in history to a certain section of the Muslim community, which would only total, I would say, 4%. And you're judging Islam itself by this view of 4%. It's not really equatable with Islam. Although I don't say everything that Imam Khomeini is doing is absolutely right. I wouldn't say that he's doing so many bad things. I say that you have to look at it in balance to what there was before. The reaction of coming from an oppressive regime such as the Shah has its effect. But then again, I wouldn't agree, as I say, with everything. And for that, we can say that we don't have to, because in Islam you have the word of God, which is for all people. It's not particular to any time or space. So therefore, whatever anyone does in the name of Islam has to be judged by the Quran and by the revelation of God, and that is just, and nobody can dispute that.
And yet people hearing you talk now, and whilst they will undoubtedly be able to see the peace and calmness that you've achieved through Islam, might find it hard to equate the lyrics of peace that you once wrote about on your road, on your quest, and the, for example, the system of Islamic justice, which is, again, something else which has made headlines in recent months, which seems so brutal. Would you support that sort of level of brutality that we hear about associated with Islamic justice?
What do you mean?
Amputation for thieves, for example.
Well, I'll give you an example about this. If you go to Saudi Arabia, and I've travelled to Saudi Arabia, where there is the Islamic law, you very rarely find anyone with only one hand. What you will find, and what I've seen with my own eyes, people leaving. When the time for prayer comes, people leave in their shops, wide open, just putting a little sheet on top, going to prayer, coming back, and everything being in its place. People leaving bags in the middle of the street. And this is what, in a way, people are judging. People are saying, oh, it's such a harsh a punishment, but what is the effect? What does it do? It actually protects, if you like, innocent, and it punishes the guilty, whereas what we find in this society is it protects the guilty and it punishes the innocent. And that's the balance that, you know, if we make up laws ourselves, we're bound to make mistakes. God doesn't make mistakes. When he decrees something, it's good for the majority. But that's the way we have to view it. I think that's very important.
You certainly seem to have embraced the faith more passionately than even people who were born Muslims. But does that indicate that you feel you've got a sort of divine mission?
Well, every one of us has a divine mission. Every human being has been created to worship and serve God. And so in a way, I mean, I may be fulfilling my mission a little bit more than someone else, let's say, but in the concept, as we see it in Islam, that all people are servants of God, whether they're obeying or disobeying.
Couldn't you have done more, though? I mean, couldn't you have spread the message more widely if you'd adhered to your faith of Islam, but spread the message using the talents of music and lyric writing and performance of Cat Stevens?
Again, you come to the point of how do you follow Islam? Do you follow it your way, or do you follow it the way that it should be followed? Does a person come to a religion to suit himself, or must he change himself to the religion? And that's, I believe that Islam is not just a religion concocted, it is actually the nature, the best nature, the best code of life for any human being, and it means that you must change your way of life to that in order to achieve what you want. So if there is music in Islam, it will come after I've learnt what Islam is, and more than just coming up in the beginning and say, ha-ha, I know what Islam is, this is what it is, everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon. There's no benefit in that kind of propagation. People come to Islam only for sincere reasons, and not for any other reason.
You said it, sir. Thank you very much indeed.
The first thing that I learnt in becoming a Muslim was that God is one, and that he has created us in the first place according to his own design. And the only thing is, he has given us also that bit extra, because he's given us a will. Now, he wants us to work according to his design, but he's given us the choice.
But didn't you find it very difficult indeed to make this choice?
To actually come to Islam, it was a long time. I mean, I was searching for the truth.
What form did the search take?
Well, I searched through many religions. In the beginning, I was brought up as a Roman Catholic.
Yes.
I believed in God, but
I didn't believe everything they told me, and I wanted the truth.
And how did you find that the Islam faith gave you that truth?
Because it's the original message, which is the religion of the prophets, in fact, and all the prophets came with the same message, that was that God is one, worship God, and avoid evil. So it wasn't that difficult to adjust back to the original religion.
Now, when you say the prophets, do you mean Moses and Isaiah and people like this who are in the Old Testament?
All the prophets of the Old Testament, Abraham, Jesus, and of course the final prophet, Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
Now, your sacred book is the Quran. How similar is the Quran to the Bible?
Well, of course, it has the same author.
Yes.
God sent the books to mankind, and originally, of course, Adam, from Adam, God taught him the words. And then, of course, we have Moses. We believe in all the books, but the Quran is the confirmation of all the books previously. In other words, if you lost all the books that were ever written, you'd be able to reconstruct them from the Quran.
Now, for many, your faith obviously means a tremendous amount to you. What have you got to say to people whose lives are so busy these days that they feel there's no peace in their life at all?
Well, peace, I believe, comes from the belief in one God. Once you realize that everything that is created, no matter whether you see it or don't see it, there's no mystery. Of course, there is some things which we can see, some things we can't see, but at least if we believe that God in His mercy has created everything, there is only one God and He's wanting us to come back to Him. The only thing for us to do is to pray.
Yusuf, normally I would thank my guests and ask for applause, but you wouldn't approve of that, would you?
No, that's not. We praise God, we don't praise men.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
ولولا فضل الله عليكم وتسلموا على أهلها ذلكم خير لكم لعلكم تهتدون.